Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code DKHOOPS. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code DKHOOPS, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies like My Date with the President's Daughter
and the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or artificial nonsense. It's just pure goodness in every pouch. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. That's Symbiotica.
The VC Show is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it, but you must be 21 or older.
The VC Show, let's go, doing the part with Roz. We got the sports on deck for our audience. Whether it's big news, hot topics, updates, straight facts, storytelling, breakdowns, or special guests. VC Show, let's go, it's time to turn it out. The VC Show, let's go.
Welcome to the VC Show, presented by Caesars Sportsbook. As you know, I'm the host, Vince Carter. Roz is doing what Roz does, as always. She's busy, she's covering the Celtics Heat right now, so we're letting her do it, but I'm holding it down today because why? I have some lady that has hopped on. I don't know how she got this link, but nevertheless, she's on. I call her my mother. Some people know her as Dr. Michelle Carter. I know her as Mom. Hi, Mom. How you doing?
Hi. How are you?
Good. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on your show. It's about time.
Absolutely. Hey, you know what they said? Timing is everything.
Yes.
Timing is everything. Yeah. And I think this is a perfect time because you have a book out that you've been doing, The Making of Vince Carter, Basketball Mom's Memoir. And first of all, do you listen to the show?
I do.
I just had to ask. I mean, you have to make sure, you know.
Of course.
Are you saying that because people are listening and the comments can be like, dang, that's messed up. Vince's mom doesn't listen, or you actually listen?
Oh.
Actually, never mind. I take that back. I do know you listen.
Yes, I do because I comment.
Because you comment on some of the good stuff. My bad.
Especially technical foul on me. If you have a hiccup and a subject and a verb don't agree, you know how I am.
Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. We get it. Yeah. Anyway. So what? Anyway. But let's get right into it about this book. You know, I'm going to ask these questions or some thoughts as like, I don't know. You can be like, you do know, but at the same time, what made you or convinced you to write a book, particularly from you? I know people have talked about the two of us doing it together, but you know how I am and how I feel about books. I just, you know, I'm a little hesitant about it, but for you, you know, where did it come from? Because I think back to the day you called asking me questions, you know, about different parts of it. I'm like, what? You know? And when did that actually start? When did it become a reality?
Well, the whole thought and the concept started many, many years ago. as your celebrity grew, as your the things you were doing were successful, people would come up to me and say, well, how did you all do this? And how did you decide to do that? And at some point, it almost seemed to me like people thought there was some kind of magic wand. And I just waved it over your head. And all of a sudden, you're Vince Carter, 8-time NBA All-Star, slam dunk champion, rookie of the year, yada, yada, yada. And I said, you know, we're no different from other families. Whether your child is trying to be successful in sports or in entertainment or in science or anything, they're not born knowing which route to take and what to do. They have to learn. Parents have to learn because, you know, in this business, I've never been down this road before. So, people would tell me, you need to write a book. You should write a book. And I mean, people have been saying this to me because you had such a long career in the NBA. People have been saying this to me 10, 15 years. And I kept saying, thinking about it, I said, well, you know, yes, I probably need to do that. But of course, life happens. You get busy. And I had a whole lot of other stuff going on, you know, because I run the foundation and all this kind of stuff. And actually, COVID in 2020 helped me to just settle down and write the book. Well, and we didn't know anything about this COVID. And, you know, the speculation early on was, okay, this will be around for a few weeks, couple of months. And it just went on and on and on. And, you know, trying to stay healthy, trying to stay out of other people's way, start, you know how I am about eating out in restaurants every day. So I had so much time on my hands. The events that I would normally go to, of course, all of those were canceled. The events that we would have with our foundation and things and basketball camps, all of that was canceled. So in that time to take up some of that space, I said, well, this is as good a time as any to start on this book. So that's how I started. And it took me 2.5 years to finish, which was a bit surprising to me because I'm telling my story. I'm telling what I lived through, but I guess, well, people who are real writers and have done this before, they probably wouldn't be surprised, but others would probably be surprised at the number of times I just hit a wall. I just hit a roadblock and I couldn't think. I would write something and I'd read it and I said, that's crappy. I'd tear it up and start over. And I was writing about things that actually happened. I was there, but for whatever reason, it just didn't come out like I wanted it to. So you do a lot of rewriting and pausing and going back and I finally got it finished. But it took a lot longer than I thought it would.
2.5 years was start to finish?
Yes.
As far as writing, or 2.5 years was writing it, getting it done to we see what we have today?
2.5 years was writing the draft, rewriting, finding a company that would publish the book, which was very difficult because I didn't know anything about how that process worked. Found Paris Media Group and Paris Dryden, and
shout out to them.
They helped me navigate through all of that process. And of course, you know, I always think outside the box, so. With the help of Paris Media, we developed sort of a hybrid, I called it, way to get the book out, to get it published. And so that's what we did. My biggest concern was giving up the control of telling my story. So that would allow me, and not even allow me, because allow, this is my story, so allow doesn't even feel like the right word, but would be would work with me in telling the story the way I wanted to tell it, to getting the book out in the community the way I wanted to get the book out in the community. So,
but yet them telling you what makes sense by doing so, yeah, coming to a happy medium.
You know, I'm willing to listen because this is all new territory for me. But within it, just like with anything, there are things that you're going to feel comfortable with doing and things that you're not going to feel comfortable doing. And some people would sort of sell the soul to the devil and do something that didn't really fit well with me. Well, you know me, I'm not a sell my soul to the devil person. So I'm not doing that. That's not happening. Yeah. So we have a good working relationship with Paris Media. And
All right. Well, let's move forward here. What made you choose this picture?
Well, I wanted a photo.
This one. Not really the one in the background, but this one.
Well, you know, I wanted a photo, not of you now, of Vince Carter now, and not...
I still look the same.
School or your first or college, because I knew I wanted to use that. I knew that graduation commencement photo would be somewhere in this book because
For sure.
That was a time
what we went through.
Your life, yes. And in my life as your mom, that I probably couldn't have been more proud and
frustrated at the same time.
Yeah. And then of course you have to consider all that you went through. And you know, I always told you from the beginning, Vince Carter, you're not in this by yourself. Mm-hmm. When you do good, that good reflects on your family. When you do not so good, that not so good reflects on your family. So just to be there to witness my child, my first child, to walk across the stage and get his degree was extremely important, not only to me, but to everybody in our family. And of course, important to you. So I knew that would be there. So I wanted a picture that would appeal to young people. I'm hoping that this book is of interest to young people, all young people, but especially young athletes and their parents, because I can recall decisions that early on that your parents had to make as parents, and then as you got older, you had to make, and then all of us had to make. And there was no guidebook. There was no set of step-by-step, this is what you do, this is what you don't do. So I tell some stories about what we went through and the decisions we made, and hopefully that will be helpful to young athletes and their parents. And to fans who are just Vince Carter fans, because it's some
and curious,
it's some funny stuff in there, as you know.
Yeah. No, I asked about the picture because I mean I still look the same, you know. But I remember this picture because of that sweatshirt. It was, you know, it's oversized, but it looks good there. But the logo on the basketball, so that takes me back from some time ago when we shot, when this was taken. So I mean, it's just a great memory. And I look through the pictures, you know, first and foremost, and I just, man, they bring back memories, because it's like every picture I look at, from being the patrol to playing at the rec, to the picture with the red shorts on, to that one volleyball picture I took. I had I had the glasses on, and I remember taking it. It was like, hey, we need to get your picture of you real quick, because I was playing at the time. I was in band, volleyball, and basketball, rushing.
Right.
And that's when that picture was taken. So, we just, because they needed something for the yearbook. I remember the band. Like, I remember them all. You know, it's cool seeing R.C. Buford's letter. That's the one from R.C. Buford, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, with the Spurs. But, man, let me tell you, going forward back here, when I look at, the picture of Ademola and I, and I mean, Ademola Antoine and I remember that. But looking at, and I remember the Olympic, like I said, every picture I look at, it's just, you know, a memory comes about. Like, being a part of all of this was just pretty cool. But the one that kind of gave me chills, man, was that picture of Stu with Stuart Scott and I, because, you know, you just a couple of days ago talked about how you heard the interview I did with Rich Eisen.
Rich Eisen, yeah.
And, you know, Rich, we talked extensively about Stuart Scott and about this moment, graduation,
yes,
day, and how he spoke at the commencement. And I mean, I remember the picture, you know, us sitting there talking, that's like kind of right before, or, you know, during the downtime of before it was showtime, and you know, starting our day of a busy day, you know, if you would. And then, you know, this picture of Stuart just kind of, oh, all the time just gives me chills, because like I told Rich, it was refreshing but motivating hearing what he said to me right before, but mostly after, how proud and how he was in the fight with me. Mm-hmm. Like he was a uncle, you know, and that's just kind of how he was. He obviously, he's a Tar Heel to the core. You know, for those who don't know him, or do know him, you know how much he loved his Tar Heel. If you read his book, it talks a lot about obviously his life, where he mentions the Tar Heels, and there again, he gave me a shout out in his book, which was pretty darn cool as well. I mean, to that picture of the the Coke 0400. That picture, you know, we laugh about it as a family, because that picture I see on my face was total fear. I took that picture.
When you signed up to or accepted the invitation to be the pace car driver, you didn't know, I didn't know, because, you know, all of those kinds of requests come through my desk, and then I come to you and see what we're going to do, what we're not going to do. Nowhere in all of that did we know the car was stick shift. And you had never driven a stick shift. And I say to people today, I say, you know, my parents taught me how to drive a stick shift in the parking lot of the mall in Miami, Northside Mall in Miami. Who learns how to drive a stick shift at the Speedway, inside the Daytona 500 Speedway?
So I'm gonna tell that story.
You did that run through. And that's
here's one of our story times, good people. I'll give a story time to that. So the story goes, the request was, you know, being in Daytona, meaning the Daytona 500, which we all know, and how historic, you know, the racetrack is there.
That was the Colt 400 that you.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I got the opportunity to do. Yeah. The Coke 400, which is prior to the 500. And I was asked to be the pace car driver. So I was like, okay, cool. I, you know, a little nervous. If you know anything about the races, it's like, you know, yes, cars go around and around and around fast. Okay, cool. I remember driving in there. This is the first day. So it was kind of the day before, you know, you're meeting everybody, kind of getting the lay of the land. They're going through all that there were, you know, all of the information. You meet the guy that I and you see the picture. I met the guy who I was driving with. We were going to take a practice run, the whole nine. They started talking, and I remember first seeing this new Camaro. This is when the Camaro was coming out, and the car, when they opened the door, I sit there. I was like, sir, is it possible that we can get, you know, an automatic? Because, you know, I've never, ever, like, I never even thought about driving, you know, a stick shift. Okay. So he's like, ooh, yeah, this is what they sent. We'll see what we can do. I'm pretty sure we can. Okay. So we're going around. I'm like, ooh, this is not going to be good. So we go through, we'll go around. You know, we didn't drive that day. I remember calling Derek, who worked for a car dealership. Because later, after it was all said and done, they told me that they could not get one in time.
Right.
You talking about terrified the day before? Like, I didn't sleep well after that. So I remember calling Derek, who worked at a car dealership to see if he can get me, I don't care if it was any car. I learned how to drive a stick shift the night before the Coke 400 in front of 250 plus thousand people. This, you know, one of the second biggest race that's in that Daytona, you know, that comes around in Daytona. I mean, obviously the Daytona 500 is obviously end all be all, but the Coke 400 is right there.
Right.
So I am literally from early evening through the night, I'm driving up and down my street, trying to get comfortable driving or feeling comfortable with the stick shift, understanding this. Now, this is outside of the anxieties of doing this.
Right.
Okay. And thinking about everything he told me, I remember telling me, you know, straightaways are easy, they're fine. And the one must do's, if you would, was on the turns, on the high embankment. I had to keep at least 55 miles an hour, which gets you kind of up midway through of the embankment. Obviously, you're the pace car driver, so you can't go 75, 100 miles an hour. You have to kind of keep it around the 55, no, you know, 60 at best. And then he says, anything below that, the car will tend to slide down, and you could possibly tip over. Oh, that's awesome. That's great. So now I'm the night before, I'm worried about making sure the car doesn't jerk the whole, I'm nauseous and, you know, all of this. I'm trying to make sure it's a smooth transition, as you know, because for me, I think the hardest is from getting into first to me was the most difficult.
Yeah.
So fine. I get there. I do a practice run. He brings the car. He leaves the car over. I do a practice one, a couple of runs in the morning. And then I get there and I see all these people. And I remember getting in that car. And when I sat in the car, you remember this. You're going to remember this. Because I have such big feet, I could not drive the car with my shoes on because they kept bumping each other.
Right. Right.
And getting stuck under the little piece of, you know, that's under the, you know, above the pedals, they kept getting stuck. So I wasn't able to shift and do it smoothly for me.
Yeah.
So I did this with no shoes on. I took my shoes off, threw it in the back seat. And I took this picture and I had that look. And I remember sitting there and my heart was beating so fast, so hard and so loud. I had headphones on. The guy was saying something to me and I couldn't hear him. Like my heart was beating so loud in my headset.
Yeah.
I could, it's just like, he was like, but he was actually talking to me and I couldn't have, cause I was not nervous. I wasn't uncomfortable. I was scared. I was terrified. So I took it off and he was like, yeah, y'all, you know, you ready to go? I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you. So we take the picture, get in the car. So now I'm just like, smooth drive. Come on, you can do it. Just like we practiced, you know, whatever, go. It was all good. I got started and then we stopped and he was talking to me. He's like, oh, by the way, this is when I knew it was going to be bad. And here's the funny part of the story. He says to me, Jimmy Johnson, I'll never forget, who was the number one car on my left. He says to me, sometimes, you know, the guys like to joke and play, you know, funny jokes and bump or tap the front of the car. Typically, particularly, Jimmy Johnson. I say to him, sir, this is my first time and you want this to go smooth. I said, if he taps me in the back, you might want to tell somebody, if he taps me in the back, this race will start early because I will pull over. I'm off the road. Because if he taps me, I'm just like, it's just like it, in an automatic car, it's not that much to think about. You know, keep it under the control, whatever. This is my second day. My second day doing this. So it's like, okay, if he hits me and I need to speed up or slow down, do I downshift? It's just a lot to think about. So the anxiety of seeing all of these people, I'm in control of the start of the Coke 400 that is on TV that people are watching.
Yes.
You know,
I'm worried about that. To me, You said, Mom, I can't mess this up. Do you realize this is their Super Bowl? This is their Super Bowl. You kept saying, this is their Super Bowl. I said, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right.
Yeah, so I'm worried about that, and then I'm worried about the embankment. I'm like, okay, don't embarrass yourself. You're on live TV. You don't go fast enough, you go tipping over. So I remember just going up, and my car swerving down and up, trying to, and we finally got there, and I never felt more relieved getting around that track and seeing that exit. Pull off to the side. And I just said, sir, y'all can have this car. I'm going to leave it right here. And I haven't been in a stick shift since. Not me driving. But, you know, I just see that and it just makes me laugh. And, you know, good memories. Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports, and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire.
21 and over, must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. Or Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. Or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with the Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through the Horseshoe Bossier City and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369.
Now we're going to transition into basketball and what's been going on in the playoffs. I know you've been watching the playoffs. We text back and forth about plays, about situation, good, bad plays, what's going on. Yeah, obviously, your thoughts, my thoughts about it. So we'll start, obviously, Lakers. Denver Lakers being swept. Coming into the playoffs, I said, whoever won their matchup between Jokic and Anthony Davis would win the series because of what will come off of that. Meaning, Jokic, if he's going one on one, you have to double team. He's such a great passer. He makes plays for everyone. Then there's Jamal Murray. So now I said the duo, you know, if the individual matchup, if he's winning his matchup, good things can happen. If they, Jamal Murray and Jokic, are dominating, that means they're dominating the duo of Anthony Davis and LeBron James. Then it's like, who will be the X factor? Because even if the duos cancel each other out, we always know it's an X factor. It's right. An X factor to it. Just somebody else is going to step up to the court. And see, for me, I said Michael Porter Jr. was the guy that needed to be to have a great series because of his abilities. He's 6'10". He can score. He could do a little bit of everything. Defensively, okay, he wasn't. That's not what he does. He's an offensive threat. That's what he does. And I felt like if he is knocking down shots, it opens the floor up because now it's a third guy you have to account for. Little did I know, KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Aaron Gordon. He didn't, you know, obviously his numbers wouldn't wow you. He still shot above 50%, maybe even in the 60s. And he had a great game 4. But I thought what he did defensively, like his job was to contain. I would dare not use the word stop or shut down. Contain LeBron James, make it tough for him, wear him down. And I thought he accomplished that goal. And yes, some will say, well, he dominated him in the first half. Yes, he did. Yes, LeBron did. But what he did, he made it tough for him. Every basket that LeBron had to get, he had to beat him. It wasn't just jab and jump shot. He had to work hard for it. And I thought, yes, you have to kind of take the punishment, take the beating in the first half. LeBron had 31. LeBron was going. He exerted a lot of energy to do so because he wanted to keep his team afloat. And that's the greatness of LeBron, man. Like, he deserves all the credit. And you can, you know, people say, oh, but we started to see the decline. Okay, the man is 38 years old, has logged in a lot of minutes, and some days are going to be better than others. It's the reality. This man has done it all year. He played a lot of minutes all year, whether it's when he was hurt or when he was not hurt and he was just trying to keep his team afloat. I thought he was playing, I mean, he was playing in the high 30s, low 40s. Like, that's a lot of minutes. And it's all great, and he's bionic and all of that. But when would it kind of catch up to him as far as wearing him down and fatigue started to set in? That's why I thought Anthony Davis was so, so huge in this series, because he needed to be alpha dog one. That's one thing I've said on TV all the time. He needs to be the go-to guy. No, give me the damn ball. LeBron, you chill out. And then their X factor, I said, Austin Reeves. That man showed up and showed out. Shout out to Austin Reeves. And Rui Hachimura was great. And the last thing, and I'll give it to you. Those four guys that I just named played great. Denver just played better. Like, if you look at matchups, Anthony Davis played very well. I mean, he had the 42-point night, but Jokic had a 35-point triple-double. LeBron James played pretty darn good. Jamal Murray was very good. Austin Reeves played very good. Michael Porter Jr., you know, played great. Plus KCP, plus Bruce Brown, plus Rui Hachimura. So it just, whatever the Lakers did, it was offset by the great play of the Denver Nuggets, and they deserve all the credit in the world. Were they disrespected by many? Yes. Disrespected by many? Yes. They were the number one seed coming in, but it's just like, I want people to understand, it wasn't more disrespectful, more so than they've been in the situation before and didn't get over the hump. They weren't able to. And it's more so, can they do it? You're just going off of trend. Yes, we see what we see. It's like, oh, yes, they were good. Regular season. But playoff is a different beast. What were your thoughts on the sweep? You know, I know I said a lot there. Well,
first of all, I'd like to say with the Lakers, for them to even be in the Western Conference Finals, based on where they started the season.
I'll give it to you. 2-10, and they were 13th in the West.
Yeah, it's commendable. With that being said, I often hear people say LeBron is superhuman, he's bionic, he's this, he's that. LeBron is a stellar athlete, but he is human. And he is 38. And, you know, you can dig that ditch and dig that ditch and dig that ditch. You're eventually going to get tired. Or, you know, that 31-point first half, well, you ain't got a hole left in the tank for the second half.
And that's why you need your other guys to kind of step up. You need Anthony Davis to step up to take the ring.
So, and then Gordon, you know, I think he was averaging like 9 points. And then he had that stellar game four. Mm-hmm. And he was defending LeBron. You can't expect me to be, you know,
when you're dealing with that type of
both sides of the ball.
When you're dealing with that type of dude.
That's mm-hmm. not human. Okay. So you needed Anthony Davis to be over the top outstanding.
And
he
aggressive.
Was great, but he needed to be over the top outstanding, and he wasn't. And yeah, that's the difference.
Yeah, and like I said, I thought LeBron did what we expected, him to come out aggressive early. And I wanted to see Anthony Davis say, okay, tag, I got it. You're tired. You gave us a half.
Yes.
Third quarter, I got it, tag. Yes. You know, particularly when he saw that, you know, we could, I mean, visibly see LeBron had, you know, gassed out. Like he was like, you know, I need a moment here. And, you know, I respect LeBron going, you know, they talk about the foot injury and he needs surgery or whatever. That man played all but 4 seconds.
Yeah.
and he still gave them what he had, and he set the tone for everyone else to just, I mean, it just, like I said, it just ran into a very tough team.
And to me, it's like, I mean, every time I see him bring the ball down court, it's like, this man is the eighth wonder of the world. A man that size with those handles and could pass, and I mean, it's like, what?
And here's the crazy thing about it. Every time he would get the rebound and start the break, like, it didn't look like a bloop, bloop. It wasn't like, you know, slow. He was moving up to where you can see defensive sprinting back to get in front of the ball. You know, it's like you're taught to sprint back.
He did it with confidence. Like, this
that's what I'm saying. I'm going to make you have to sprint back. That's what he does. But, it's just like that's something that the sprinting back is usually when your guards get the ball. It's a long outlet. You got to get back. No, you're getting back because the point center is in a dead sprint with the basketball. Like, that's
and
not Jason Kidd.
He's going to take it coast to coast. And that's going to really look bad. Yeah.
Are you buying... This is the talks today all across TV. And obviously, his post-game interview. Are you buying LeBron considering retirement? Like, you know, like I know what I'm thinking, but what are your thoughts on that? Like, did you see the post-game interview?
Yeah. Here's my thoughts on that. Obviously, LeBron was very emotional. You just played your heart out and you came up short. So obviously he's emotional. For anybody, whether it's a basketball player, whatever it is, after going through that emotional stress and to make such a big decision immediately after that, I'm not buying it. LeBron, go take a couple of vacations with your family or walk with your boy, have a good time. You know, refresh and renew, then talk about that.
Which he did not. So he didn't. He didn't do interviews today with the team.
Yes,
You know, he's taking the right steps. The organization is doing the right thing, just giving him space because, like you say, LeBron is accustomed to going to the finals. He said it.
Yes,
I don't get excited about this. I mean, and it's a flex, but it's the truth.
Right.
You know, you rarely don't see in 20 years, you don't see him in the finals of some sort. So it's more an annoyance that he could not get it done for his team. I know that. You can see it. It's like, I don't want to answer these questions now. I don't know. I mean, I didn't get it done. He, you know, that's LeBron's thinking. So I don't think. He's contemplating. I just don't think he's contemplating. He's just keeping us on edge. Yeah. I just got you right here till I'm ready to tell you what I want to tell you.
And you got to give it to him. It's a hell of a soundbite.
Yeah. And he knows
everybody
that.
Everybody now is talking about it.
Yeah. He knows that. And that's the point. And to me, that is the point. He wants to give us something to talk about. The Lakers are out, but we're going to still talk about LeBron James and his decision. And, you know, shout out to him because he knows his power, the power that he has, and what comes out of his mouth. It's gonna start these storylines. And the other thing about that is he has talked about him wanting to play with his son. So his son is getting close. Is he good enough to go one and done? We'll see. And to make it happen, I don't know. So, yeah.
My thought on that too. I mean, it's nice to say that. And okay, if he can play with his son, that would be great. But the power that you have to have to make that happen, you're on a team. Your son, you gotta navigate him being on the same team. I mean, that's a lot of power.
You can do it. Just so you know. I don't know if you know. You can do it.
You know.
And then think about this. I'm going to say this. Particularly how if Bronny is not a high draft pick.
Yeah.
If he's not a lottery pick. I mean, I don't know where they're going to fall in the draft. So I'm just saying if he's not a guaranteed top five pick where he's going to go, like it could possibly happen. So, I mean, they can move up the draft, you know, use I don't know what assets they have and all of that stuff, but you know, they can manipulate it. Or if he doesn't get drafted at all.
Yeah, that's my point. If depending on what the situation is, there's a lot of pieces that's got to move for that to happen.
Oh, yeah.
And I know you're LeBron James, but you've got that kind of power to maneuver that? So, I mean, that's a whole nother chapter in that discussion. But
I'm going to say yes. Speaking of power, I'm going to talk about Rob Pelinka, GM. I think he has, one, done a great job because I think he was heavily criticized with the team that was displayed in the beginning of the season, which, you know, obviously put them in a situation where they were 13th place, but he was able to make the moves to get the help they needed.
Yeah, and he righted the ship. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and that says a lot about him, you know, to being able to, whether he said I'm wrong about it, but he recognized that something needed to be done, whether it was LeBron and AD or someone. I'm sure LeBron and AD had a lot to say, but I'm sure you hear it. You're in LA. You're going to hear it every day. You can't turn on the TV and not hear about, particularly in LA, about the Lakers and what they're not doing. Right. So I thought he did an unbelievable job, and the pieces they picked up, it was just like, okay, all right, you know, they have a little bit more of everything they need, some shooting, some defenders, they can, you know, they can play, you know, guard different positions, they can do all of these different things, but is it enough? Boy, was it enough. I mean, look at them. Like I said, they were able to turn that around with, I mean, this wasn't the team that came in. They got right. They got this team at the trade deadline and put them in the conference finals.
Yes.
Like, it's just, it says a lot about, you know, the organization, Coach Darvin Ham, his first year, still able to, you know, figure it out. This is a first year coach, not, you know, not going, having a smooth first year. Like, they're, I mean, he went through the bumps and bruises, like the ebbs and flows of, like, of like, of what a coach never wants to do. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. And, you know, so, you know, to hear like, oh, you know, they thought, oh, he got out coached. Okay. You know, but they ran into a very good basketball team. And I have to say it, and I know you said it, like, coaches, players, people, we don't walk into new situations and just automatically have the experience. You have to go through, you know, you got to take your licks. Yeah. You got to learn it. You got to go through it. I had LP, Coach Lloyd Pierce on here. That's what he said. He's like, I was prepared for the opportunity, not for what comes with the job. And that's, you know, everything is just like you're throwing. It's like, oh, okay, this is new. This is new.
Experience in
Popovich.
Get experience in anything, you have to have the first time.
Yeah.
Then after that, it's experience. Everybody.
Greg Popovich. Yeah. Greg Popovich had to go through it. Like the great coaches, absolutely. You know, the first time and gain the experience and understanding this is how I'm going to coach. Eric Spoelstra, like he had to go through it. Look where he's come from. Like, regardless of if you were on the bench as an assistant coach or not. And this is the same with Joe Mazzulla. Regardless of that, like Lloyd said, until you're sitting in the captain's seat, where the captain has the final word all the time. Yes. It's a different, like autopilot is taking off. It's like, ooh, this is what I say is going to be the final decision. Like it's a different, it's a huge difference. So lastly, I was going to say about LeBron is I wanted to mention is that I think about, for me, when I said 2020 was going to be my last year and I said it, but I didn't believe it. Let me rephrase it. I said it, but I wasn't sure. And I think LeBron is kind of going through those situations like, okay, when he's talking through this, like in real time.
Yes.
Because that's what I was doing. Yes. I was literally for 5 years, maybe longer.
Eight years.
Through it. Yeah, whatever. I was literally talking through it in real time. It's like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, when's it over? I don't know. Like 2 more years. It just felt right.
Yeah.
A couple years. Like, and not realizing people were going to actually hang on to that. Okay, 2 years up. Like, nah, I'm good. A couple more years. Like, you know, and I think LeBron is kind of talking through this in real time because one thing he said that resonated to me is like, I have a lot of decisions to make because it's like, okay, you know, a lot of analysts have talked about, it's like, does he want to and willing to and have the want to continue to go through this, and maybe the teams aren't good enough to even make it to the conference finals, and be okay with that. Because like he said, this is not it. I'm like, I'm not cool. I mean, I'm not happy we made it to the conference final. But it's to us, it is amazing what they did. But there again, it's that aspect of it, the aspect of wanting to play with his son. Somebody made a good point. Maybe he's realizing Bronny doesn't want to go through that. You know, that's another. And I was like,
Well, and I think, and I'm glad you said that, because when I heard him say that, wanting to play with his son, my first impression was, oh no.
But it's just,
you as daddy, yes, you would be proud. I'm playing with my son. But now sit in the different seat, different vantage point, and think about what your son is going to go through when you do that.
You know, who will be a great person? I'm thinking of two people immediately. I think of Ken Griffey Jr., who did play with his dad.
Yes.
And it'll be interesting, or it's cool. I mean, it's been documented about playing with his dad, how his dad enjoyed it, but Junior also enjoyed it. You know, it was kind of a thing, you know, but this is a different time.
A different time.
Yes. You know, but still, it'll be cool to, you know, for LeBron to sit and talk to Griff, right, and hear what he has to say. Now, I think of the other side, Doc Rivers' son.
Yes.
I think of Austin, you know, who kind of went through a lot, you know, playing for his dad and being in the league and this, that, and the fourth. And, you know, Austin got traded. His dad traded him. Right. You know, so, but it's just, you know, it just depends. To me, it depends on the kid. Because I tell you what, Bronny, the way he handles himself is amazing. It's amazing. Because it's a lot of pressure on him. And yeah, people are waiting, I think sometimes are waiting for him to crack.
Yes.
You know? And just kind of just, because at one point they're like, oh man, he's not, and you can relate to this when I say this. Oh man, he's not like his dad. And that can send him left.
Yes.
And searching for something else, you know? But Bronny, as well as Melo's son, those two guys have been, because their dads were still killing it in the league. And right, now they're going through the circuit, you know, and kids, like if I'm playing against, you know, LeBron's kid or Carmelo's kid, I'm trying to get any advantage I can to dog you. Oh man, you're not as good. Whatever advantage. Like he has to go through that every time. Every time he goes on the road.
Yes.
I mean, you know, it was like for me to go on the road in high school, but this is next level.
They have to be physically tough. They have to know the craft, and they've got to be mentally tough.
He is, yes, and I give him all the credit in the world, man. Yes. You know, because it's just like he's scrutinized for his game. Is he top? You know, and I was one of those guys. Like, all right, you know, he deserves. Obviously, it's going to be you're LeBron's kid, so that's going to come with it. You're going to get the national attention, but if he's good enough, give him his just due. If he's not good enough, don't put him on just because. And I thought he handled, not only did he handle the McDonald's thing to like perfection, he made a lot of people say they made the right decision. And I said, because I think he was out of the top 24 at the time, but they put him in, obviously, obvious reason. But he showed up and showed out also.
Right.
So, and so I'm happy for those guys. So I'm just curious about that. I just think about my experiences with retirement and just so many things to think about. And he being LeBron, who is still playing at an unbelievable level, has a lot to decide. So I saw a lot of that in that post-game interview. And I was just curious if you saw that as well.
Yeah.
Do you think they should keep Austin Reeves? Resign him?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think Rui Hachimura is another one.
He is an outstanding shooter. He's got that touch. But you know what else I like about him? I like that he picks his moments. He mixes it up. He knows he can get to the line. he can score in the paint, and he knows how to draw that foul, and then he's an excellent free throw shooter. I mean, yes, they to me, they'd be crazy to let him go.
And then, you know, we can't. I'd be remiss if we do not talk about the Denver Nuggets, and I know a lot of Nuggets fans. I see you on Twitter when you guys are talking your junk. The Nuggets fans, yeah, you have a reason to be proud, and I want to give this moment here to the Denver Nuggets and say this. Under the radar all season, but still number one in the West, and you were able to prove and sustain it because, you know, after all that has been said about you, can they be the same team that they were in the regular season? And I think that's what people wanted to see before they just pushed all their chips into Denver. Yes, you know, everybody kind of say, oh, the Phoenix Suns and Devin Booker. Like, you're like, yes, I mean, these guys are playing great. Devin Booker was playing unbelievable. Yes. You know, they just did not have enough, you know, but everybody's fascinated because of who Kevin Durant is. Like, it just what it is what it is. And, you know, then it was the Memphis Grizzlies and you know, what would happen there. Then it's the Golden State Warriors. So there's a lot of teams that are historically has had success in the postseason. So it's like, okay, you know, you never can count the Golden State Warriors out. You can't. Regardless of all that happened, you still didn't count them out until you actually shut them out.
Yeah.
So Denver Nuggets are here. Now let's go back to the other side. You know, you're a Miami girl and all of that. And the Boston Celtics and the Miami Heat are battling it out. And what are your thoughts on what you've seen from the Miami Heat from regular season? Because I know we had this conversation when the Hawks beat the Miami Heat. We were like, man, like they did not look good. Then all of a sudden, we get this. What are your thoughts on the Miami Heat?
Well, the battle is not the battle I thought we were going to see, number one. Disappointed in the Boston Celtics. They seem to not be playing with energy, effort, purpose. You know, there's a pretty big purpose you should be playing with in this playoff. Miami Heat, Jimmy Butler. I just would say Jimmy Butler, bold, all caps, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point, and his supporting cast, because you can't do it by yourself.
They've been great.
And they have grooved and jived and playing together. And I didn't even imagine. I thought the resistance that they would get from the Boston Celtics would have been greater.
Mm-hmm. This is a quick one. What run has impressed you more? Denver Nuggets or Miami Heat?
Miami Heat.
I think the same for me. It's just like you never count Jimmy out. And Kyle Lowry's my guy. Don't count him out. You know, he had injuries and, you know, I think it started with him from his sacrifice from when he got injured and said, no, I'll come off the bench, let Gabe continue to start. Mm-hmm. And I'll work with the second unit. You know, his energy, the way he plays was infectious from the beginning. And the Miami Heat, I got a chance to sit with Spoelstra and hearing him talk about how important Kyle has been to their organization. But man, the empowerment, listening to Gabe Vincent talk about the empowerment of the superstars, they're allowing those other guys, Duncan Robinson, Max Strus, Caleb Martin, allowing those guys to be themselves and go out there and get buckets and not feel hesitant when they're trying to go one-on-one or taking a shot and look over and like see if everybody's like, man, what you doing? Give me the ball. It's none of that. And I think when you get guys can play freely, you get this. You get this, and that's what they're doing, because their leader is playing off the charts, and Bam has responded too. I thought Bam would have to have a great series to help for the Miami Heat to do what they're doing, because if Bam was not playing well, Jimmy couldn't do it by himself.
Yeah, and think about this: if it's Miami, which it looks like it's going to be, and it's Denver, my hats off. Both coaches have
Spoelstra and Coach Malone
had to do a phenomenal job, because you talked about Denver and under the radar. We don't see him, you know, East Coast drives to television. We don't see him a whole lot on television. But to keep them on a string, to keep them focused, to keep them not caring what anybody says, who counting us out, and da-da-da-da-da, and to play, to continue to play the way they're playing. And look at what Spoelstra is doing with the Miami Heat. You got some strong personalities on that Miami Heat team. And that can go haywire.
Get in the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yet it has not. But there again, I think it's Jimmy Butler being the leader, not afraid to say what he needs to say, and Kyle Lowry as well. You know, so that's going to be a good final.
I think. Should. This is one for me that I've been hearing people talk about. Do you think the Boston Celtics should break up the Tatum Brown tandem duo, if you choose? Do you think Boston should break up the Tatum Brown duo?
People ask that question, and my question is, I know you don't answer a question with a question, but my question would be why? I mean, give me your reasoning for asking that question. Why?
See, to me, I think it's more of the player. What does Jaylen Brown want? Because what is he looking for? Like in as he moves forward, because he can make the most money with Boston. They've accomplished a lot. Yes, they've fallen short, but they've made that tandem work, because he's been just as important to Boston as their superstar Tatum. When Tatum has not played bad, guess who has saved the day? Guess who was playing the best? Yeah. Jaylen Brown. And he didn't feel like he was hindered by any means to go out there and do his thing, because Jason Tatum has allowed him, and he understands how important he is. So I think it's Jaylen Brown who has to figure out what does he want now. And it kind of reminds me of the T-Mac thing. It was kind of like everybody was like, they felt that T-Mac and I should have stayed together. And yeah, obviously we that's family, but I hoped so as well. But I understood him moving forward, because he wanted to be the number one. He wanted to be the guy to make the decisions and have another guy to go for it. And we can't hate him for that. Like we as fans kind of want, you know, we want what we want. It's like, oh man, but y'all are good together. We're great together. Like, yeah, and hearing T-Mac talk about it now, it's like, man, it'd have been good. Sometimes I wish we did stay together. But what T-Mac accomplished, he felt mentally it was the best decision for him to come out of his shell to be the Hall of Famer that he is now. Like, mm-hmm. Because we're making this assumption or assessment off of the T-Mac we saw that moved on. You know, right. When he got to Orlando, he was a monster. Like, yes. And then when he got to Houston, like, he was like insane. So people are like, dang, if Vince like doing what he's doing and Mac doing what he's doing, like, and it was like, he had to go kind of like what LeBron did. He had to go to Miami to learn how to win and grow, and came back to Cleveland. It's kind of that situation. Well, thank you again, guys. Go check out the book, pre-order it, do what you got to do. It's going to be in everywhere, not just local libraries. It's going to actually be on Amazon. She's going to be in, you're going to be in Walgreens. Look at you. You're going to be everywhere. You go, girl. All right, guys. Appreciate you guys. VC Show fans, we're signing off. Let's go.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, should we go electric?
I think we should go electrified with Toyota.
Electrified?
Electrified means options. Yes, we could go all electric with a Toyota bZ4X, but then there are hybrids like Grand Highlander, or we could do something in between like a RAV4 plug-in hybrid.
So Toyota is electrified diversified?
Yep, and with more options for reducing carbon emissions, the closer we all get to Toyota's Beyond Zero vision for the future.
Exactly how much coffee have you had this morning?
Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.